Blog Talk Radio.
Every time I hear that song. Hello, everybody. It's Nicole here with Bring Your All, and I'm so excited for you to join me for this hour of Bring Your All Radio. I hope you guys are doing well because I know I'm having a fantastic day and so excited to be sharing this next little bit of time with you. I wanted to share with you something that's happening in my life behind the scenes. I'm actually in the process of moving apartments. My husband and I have been checking out new neighborhoods in New York, trying to figure out where our next home is going to be. And we had been out on Sunday afternoon. We were about 6 apartments in, 2.5 hours into our search. It was a hot day. We hadn't eaten in a while. And our emotions were starting to get the best of us. And I'm so grateful for the fact that I learned how to be a better communicator. Because as we're talking, we were really starting to figure out what is it that we want. As we're looking at all these apartments, you know, we're realizing that maybe we weren't on the same page anymore. We thought we wanted, you know, a bigger apartment, or did we actually care about some of the bells and whistles like the dishwasher, the doorman, things that we started to take for granted sometimes living in New York City. So we have to have another conversation to really make sure we are on the same page. And I think back to my younger years and I think, wow, that could have been a complete temper tantrum moment for me. That could have been a situation where I yelled and I screamed and I stormed off and said, you don't understand me. And I realized that that doesn't actually solve the problem. What solves the problem and what gets you moving forward eventually to get you where you want to go is being able to have a communication, to being able to have a conversation, a two-way conversation where you're speaking and you're also listening, to be able to understand and hear what the other person has to say, and to somehow find a middle ground so that you're both, you know, making sure that you're heard, and also so that you both feel aligned as you move forward. And it was really interesting to me as I was going through this in my own personal life, and I was finishing up a book by Leah DeCesare, who's on with us today. It's her debut novel, actually, Forks, Knives, and Spoons. So I want to make sure I got that. I think I might have messed it up. No, I didn't. Forks, Knives, and Spoons, yay. And there were so many moments in that book, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've been that girl. I've been the one that's too afraid to have my own voice, that I've been too afraid to, you know, speak my mind and to really have a constructive conversation. And I can go on and on about all the psychological things that were happening in the background as to why maybe I wasn't ready at that time. But reading this book and then seeing how far I've come in my own life, there was just a lot happening for me that day. So, Leah, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for writing your debut novel, because honestly, it touched me in more ways than I could have imagined. And I just wanted to congratulate you.
Thank you so much. I honestly, that's like music to an author's ears. So I really do appreciate that. And I can appreciate your story that you started with. I mean, apartment hunting in New York is impossible on a good day.
Absolutely.
And you nailed it. I've been married 23 years, and communication is the key to success for sure.
Absolutely. So before we jump into the book, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about becoming an author. You know, I know we've spoken about this before, and you've said that becoming a writer has always been your childhood dream. How did you go from a dream to reality?
So I took a very, I guess I'll take the scenic route. I had always wanted to. I wrote all through elementary school and high school. It was something I loved, but then sort of took a practical path in college and majored in business, did advertising, marketing, and French, and continued my career in New York City after working for Lord & Taylor. I was in the buying program there, did buying, and then did some public relations. So my writing was more proposals and press releases, and really I wasn't doing creative writing. And then had children and my writing kind of extended to little journals and small things like that. Eventually, I became a doula, which was inspired by having kids. So I was supporting moms and families in birth and in the immediate postpartum period. And during that time, I was encouraged to start a blog. I didn't really get what it was all about, but I dove in and started writing. And that's what got me writing regularly and sort of working again on the craft of writing by writing 500 to 1,000 word posts. So that really got me back interested and ready to write. It also catapulted me into sort of an experimental book. I never expected my first book to be a parenting book, but those blog posts and my work with families as sort of an early parenting coach led me to write Naked Parenting. So I did that and then was like, all right, I can write a book. I found those to be relatively easy compared to writing a novel. But I just had to realign my life and my priorities and made the decision. So I was in my 40s and decided, what are you waiting for? When are you going to do this? When are you going to follow this dream? This is the one thing that if I'm, you know, older and look back on that I'm going to regret. You have to make this happen. So that's what I did.
I love that where you mentioned priorities and really figuring out what do you want to look back on in life. And I think a lot of people are afraid to take that moment and really say, what do I want my life to look like? What do I not want to regret 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? So the fact that you had that moment of clarity and really said, no, this is a priority, this is something that I need to do, is incredible. It's really inspiring for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well. You mentioned that, life happens. You go to school, you go on the route that everyone expects you to. You did business, you did all of that. Was there ever a time where you kind of fell out of love with this passion of writing?
I don't think I did. I feel like it's hard to almost remember, though, in those middle or busy years. Odd as that happens, I feel like I'm not that far out of college, right? But in reality, I'm so far out that it does get a little foggy. So, I think I always had that burning desire somewhere deep down. And I think also, too, on some level, I always knew I would do it. And then that's when that reality hit. It was like, well, when? Like, you know you're going to, but you haven't made that happen and you haven't realigned things to allow that to be a priority in my life. So, no, I think I always was, even while I was on these different paths, I always knew I would write a novel.
Amazing. You talked about priorities and, really making time for yourself. And I'm sure having a busy life, it can be a challenge, especially if you have kids and you have, other jobs and you have other things going on. How did you find a way to prioritize it? What did you have to do to make this happen?
So I think that, and that's a great question. And I think that, it has to start with what do I value and are my actions aligning with those values? And so it was when I really said, yeah, I value writing this book. How am I going to align my actions to that? So I had been very involved as a doula. I had founded a nonprofit doula organization in Rhode Island. I had been on an international board representing the entire Northeast region, and I was doing a lot of travel and a lot of volunteer hours. So instead of shirking that responsibility, what I did is just knew I was not going to re-up when my term ended. I started to train a successor, those sorts of things, to be able to align my life to do that. I started going more to a writer's conference instead of birth-related conferences and started to kind of, find my tribe and really started to connect with other authors. I would finish a novel. I'm a huge reader as well, but I'd finish a novel and reach out online to that author and really kind of almost started building a network of people who were doing what I wanted to do already. And that building relationships is huge in every single aspect of life, no matter what. And I found that to be really useful and really helpful as an author and for support as I was writing it, for advice and connections to editors and agents and just even help with promotion and getting authors have to get their own blurbs. So those little notes on the book that are from other authors speaking about your book, most of the time you can get some help, but a lot of the times authors are speaking to other authors to to call in a favor to have them do that. So that's really hard for a debut novelist. So I was able to kind of try to use that network and reach out to people who I had already started a little bit of a relationship, even if it was just online and not in person. So those are some of the things I did to try to realign things and make it happen. And I'm very grateful to have a really supportive family. My husband is awesome and does tons of help with the kids. I mean, not even help. I mean, he's a true equal partner in the home. So that helped. And my kids are all teenagers now, so they still were a little bit younger and actually need mom more, I think, in those older years sometimes. So that was still also always a priority for me. So that was something that I just, you know, they were in school, so I would have to juggle my schedule to work around still being able to take them to their activities and still be mom number one, but also fit the other piece that was important to me into my life. And I also felt like that, in doing that, it really helped me become a better role model for them as well, that, you know, it's not 100% focused on the kids, that, you know, taking care of mom and that mom is doing something that she really wants to do and is important to her, that matters and that's valuable.
Was that hard to do? I mean, I know we've talked about juggling things, and did you ever feel like you were letting people down, or when you started to back away from your work as a doula, did people ever ask you, like, you know, why aren't you doing this? Or did you ever feel as though your time was being pulled in other areas?
Yeah, I think that's probably like the definition of womanhood and motherhood. but I really subscribe to a guilt-free living. Like, I don't really do guilt. And it's kind of an active process, but, you know, I do believe in that whole, you know, put oxygen on yourself first before helping others. And I needed to do that. I mean, I writing has been what I've wanted to do, and I needed to do this, and as well as other things in my life as well. But I felt like, yes, we're always being pulled in other directions, but I had to get good at saying, gosh, I'm a little bit interested in helping out with that program at the school. But you know what? Right now I can't. So maybe I'll bake cupcakes and send them, and I'm not gonna go to the event. Or maybe I'm not gonna bake at all this time. So I really did have to get okay with not doing every single thing I was asked to do, and to start saying, sorry, I can't. And guess what? It turned out that it was fine. I ebb and flow through that. I happen to be in a period right now of doing too much, but I tend to go through that where I do too much, and then I start to scale back, train successors, get other people who can take my place, so the transition is very easy, and then again, reduces my guilt because I've put somebody in place who's competent and ready to take over and eager, and then I scale back, and then I tend to find myself going back again to other activities. The difference as I've gotten older, though, I think, Nicole, is also that I will say yes now to things I do really care about. Like, I don't say yes now if I really don't want to do it. I decline. Politely, respectfully, but I'm out of there. I'm not going to do it if I really don't want to do it. I'm not spending my time on it.
The subtle art of saying no. I think that is such an important lesson for people to understand, because sometimes, and I know I've struggled with this myself, you overextend. You're so worried what other people will think that you say yes to things to be the nice person, when in reality, you know that that's not where your passions really lie, or you're not really interested. But you say yes because you don't want other people to worry. It kind of goes back to that need for external validation, whether you call it that or not. That's really what's happening. You want other people to be happy, and you kind of lose a part of yourself in that. So you've been able to really focus and regain that and really know what it is that you want to do, and to be able to really focus and say, this is a priority. All this other stuff doesn't matter is huge. And I think, you know, you're a great example of, if you want to do something, you have to make those hard choices sometimes. Like, you're a mom, you're a writer, you're a volunteer. You have a lot of things happening. But to be able to accomplish what it is you want to accomplish, you have to figure out what's priority one right now and what else can go away.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely. And sometimes you have to start with the smaller steps. You know, if you think you're in the wrong job, you might not be able to just quit tomorrow, but what are the steps you can take? The training to get in the new job, the networking to get in the new job, like, what you have to kind of look around that bend to make things happen. But I do feel like if we can really concretely define our goals and our values, then it's easier to then make the steps and the plan in order to get there.
Absolutely. I love that you talk about setting people up for success, that you are transitioning people into, you know, being able to step up for you when you are going to take a step back. You know, the fact that you reached out to authors after you'd finished reading their books, I don't think I would ever have the courage to do that. What would you talk to them about? Like, how did you even start those conversations to start building that network?
You could literally reach out to any author and they would be thrilled, maybe barring like those really, really, really big time people. But anybody who is not on, you know, the Jodi Picoult, James, what is his name? Grisham. Right, Jim? What's his first name? I don't even remember.
John Grisham.
Yeah. John, right. Yeah, if you're not on that level, like, people would, like, reply back eagerly, I'm certain. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know me well enough, at least, to know that talking is not one of my weaknesses. Like, I love connecting with people in all different ways. From the grocery store line, I can strike up a conversation anywhere. Like, I love connecting with people, and whatever way that looks. I love writing letters and notes and remembering people's birthdays. So I don't know. It felt very natural for me to be like, hey, just finished this book. I loved it. This is why I connected for it. It could just be a sentence or two. But I think that, you know, that kind of opens the door to a further dialogue and for them saying, oh, well, you know, kind of more about you, and it continues. So go ahead and reach out to your next favorite author.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question for your favorite author, now's the time to ask it. We have Leah on the line. So give us a call at 646-787-1676. If you have a question for Leah, now's your chance. Call us at 646-787-1676. So I have to ask, now that you've followed your dream and it's taken you on this amazing journey where you've debuted your first novel, and I know that you just finished up your second one, if I'm not mistaken, what
Yep.
advice would you give to someone who has a dream, but they're too afraid to go for it?
So I think that one of the biggest messages in my book is to believe in yourself, and I would say that's the first step, that believe you can do this. The next thing I would say is some of the things we've kind of already talked about, but I would make a plan, do some research. So what does it take to learn that new skill, to follow that dream, find out what it is, and then set your goals. So I love goal setting. And again, there's many ways to look at this or to call it or how to do it. But obviously as a writer, I think there is a ton of value. This has also been researched that there's value in writing it down. But I would say write down your goal. What is the big goal? Make it concrete. Make it definitive. Set actual deadlines by this date in this year. I want to be blah, blah, blah. And then you can also then do the baby steps. So I actually even do this with my kids and my family. They roll their eyes at me, but they do it. And I think that it's also teaching them a good lesson. And now they just kind of are accustomed to it. But every January we do it, every beginning of the summer we do it, and then I've just printed out the forms for the beginning of the school year, and we create our goals. So what's the goal that's around school or reading or money or, you know, personal development, whatever they may be, I have categories, and then what are the baby steps to get there? You know, what are the things you can do day in, day out that get you to that monthly goal, the weekly, you know, the quarterly goal, the yearly goal? So I think that really helps, and then write it down. I'd also say find an accountability partner. Tell someone who's going to be supportive. If you know that your mom perhaps is going to be really negative about that, or your sister, or whatever, don't tell that person necessarily, but find somebody who is going to encourage you and support you and cheerlead you. And I know that when I say something out loud, I'm the kind of person that I am not going to not do that. Like, if I've committed to that. So it really helped me. I actually, one of the steps I did is I did hire a book coach. She's phenomenal. She does mostly nonfiction, so it probably wasn't the exact perfect fit, but it didn't matter. We did a lot of great work early on, and I had to get projects and things done for her for our next call. So that really helped me at the outset get myself on the straight and narrow, get a plan together to really start kicking off this new piece. So in some ways, she was like that professional accountability partner, But I also did start telling my family and friends and sharing that, that this is what I'm going to do. So I think that also is really helpful. So find somebody who's really going to be supportive of you and then go for it.
Yeah, it's all about taking those steps and overcoming the overwhelm. I think so many people are paralyzed by the fear because they don't do the steps that you just talked about, how you break it down. When you have this big goal and you say one day, I want to be a writer or I want to be a novelist, I want to have a book published, that can be a very scary concept for people because all they can see is this massive end goal. They don't see all the baby steps that they need to take to get there. So I totally agree with you. List, break it down. Set yourself up for success by making manageable action items. Don't say, okay, I'm going to write a book and it's going to be done in 2 weeks. Like, be realistic with yourself. Know your schedule. Know how you are as a person. And really make sure that you are, you know, taking into consideration everything that's happening so that you do succeed, so that that when you get to that checkbox, you get to tick it off.
Absolutely. And I think that, like, so, for example, with the author piece, being an author is more than just writing a book. It's so, so much more. So simultaneously, while I was working on the actual writing, I was also reading a lot about craft. I was going to conferences and workshops and online sessions to learn about the craft of writing. But I was also studying the publishing industry and learning about current trends, there's a huge realm from 100% independent publishing, self-publishing, to the other spectrum of 100% traditional. And right now, there's just a huge piece in the middle, different hybrids, small presses, unagented presses. There's just so many different options in the middle realm, and I was trying to sort all that out. So I also studied that. And then the kind of third big piece is studying the business of being an author and the marketing and the building a brand. This isn't my only book. I don't want it to be. So I had to think about that. So being able to also, say, check something off your list that might not seem like writing the book can still make you feel like you've got those small victories to celebrate. So if I, you know, read a blog post about publishing industry and I wrote for an hour, well, that's an awesome day. Maybe it's also that I attended a workshop, but I didn't write all weekend. Okay, like, what can you say that that is working on the book that maybe is not just the physical sitting down and writing the story? Obviously, that has to be done, but there's also other facets of that that can create, like what you're saying, those small successes to set yourself up for, oh, yeah, I can do this. It's one more success in the right direction toward my larger goal.
Absolutely. You mentioned a little bit earlier about accountability buddies and finding people that are going to support you, because sometimes there are people in your life who love you, but they don't understand what it is that you want to do. And sometimes their confusion can come off as negativity. When you were, you know, telling people that you were going to be an author, that you were writing this book, did you ever come across any of those instances where you got those kind of head-scratching moments? Like, how did you continue to communicate and tell people what it is that you're doing?
You know, I can't think of any offhand. It doesn't mean they didn't happen, but I tend to be extremely optimistic and fairly confident. So I probably disregarded the people and just kind of brushed it off. I just don't remember anybody being really negative about it. I think that, you know, perhaps they were in their head, and maybe to me they were like, oh, great. And in the back of their head, maybe they're saying, ah, she'll never do that. I don't know. But yeah, if that happened, I didn't let it bother me and I didn't let it set me back. I just plugged forward and forged ahead.
Then you are in a very great place, because I know that there are some people who have not been as lucky as you in sharing what it is that they want to do and telling people and, you know, not really getting that support that they were hoping for. And that can be really demoralizing at times. So it is important to find that support system, to find your tribe, as you said, to find the people that are going to get you and want to see you succeed, to kind of help each other grow together. I think that's a really important lesson for all of us to learn.
And it's hard depending on who the negative person is, right? Is it somebody in your family? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it is trickier to go about that and share that with people. But yes, finding the people that are going to support you is key.
Absolutely. And I think that is something that I took away from your novel, Forks, Knives, and Spoons. If you guys haven't read it, you should definitely check it out. It's on Amazon as well. I think it's also in Barnes & Noble, I remember hearing. But yep. I got mine on Amazon. So definitely check it out. I don't want to give away the story, so my questions are about the book, but they're not going to give away too much because I definitely want you guys to check it out if you haven't done so already. But just a little quick background. The story is about a young lady named Amy, and she is about to embark on her first year at college. She's going off to Syracuse. Sounds a little familiar, Leah. And before she heads off to school, she's out to dinner with her dad. And he gives her some really good advice about guys, about the different types of guys there. And as you can imagine, there's forks, knives, and spoons. And I'm sure we'll get into what that is in a little bit later. But why did you have her hear this advice from her dad rather than a different female role model in her life?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's a great question. And I honestly had never thought of it any other way because the true kernel of this story comes from the fact that my dad and mom took me out to dinner before going off to Syracuse. So people are always interested in, you know, how much is autobiographical in a story and how much isn't. And this is not my story. However, people need to be from somewhere. They need to go to some kind of school. And it's really super fun, actually, to make it from somewhere that I know and love. So that is why I did it in Syracuse. And so this my dad had told me this really off the cuff. He may have had reason to believe that his oldest daughter going off to college, while a good student, may not have been the most, might have been a little naive when it came to the boy department. So he is like his last desperate attempt. I can picture it now as a parent, like I couldn't when I was 18. And we sit down to dinner and he's, you know, shares this thing. There's three types of guys. There's the forks and, you know, they're like cocky, arrogant. They're the players. They'll cheat on you, you know, be really careful of the forks. And then the spoons and, you know, maybe they're a little bit more kind of a loser, or maybe they're really geeky, but, you know, not the cool geeks of, you know, 2017, the geeks of 1988. and that dorky, we would say back then. And then he said the biggest category is the knife category. And in the knife category, you'll find somebody who's really good for you. Somebody who's, you know, respectful and maybe not really confident like the forks, but he'll find his confidence. So that's kind of what he said to me. And I went off to college and shared these little nuggets, like this tiny little kernel, with my girlfriend. And it was crazy. It went viral before viral was a thing. And we just, like, used it in normal discussion. I mean, we'd be like, oh, my gosh, that guy is such a complete fork. And, oh, you know, it just became very normal. I remember one of my girlfriends making fork, knife, and spoon earrings. And we just talked like that. And so it grew to the point where it wasn't just forks, knives, and spoons. It was then plastic forks and pseudo forks and pitchforks and sporks and butcher knives. And we created all these other different, you know, nuances and different definitions of different kinds of guys. So it just was this crazy thing. So it kind of stuck with me for all those years, but there was no story. I mean, that in itself is not a story. So I kind of always lingered there, but when I finally decided to write my novel, this was the first idea I had and then had to build the whole story around it. So back to your original question, I never really dawned on me that somebody else would tell her the story. It was always going to be her dad to tell her that.
Well, I love that you were able to pull from real life experience. And I think for me, having, you know, been a freshman girl off to college in a foreign area, I grew up in New York, but I'm in school down south. I didn't really have a big support system near me. But I think about if I had gotten that conversation, who would have had the biggest impact on me? And it really is about the people you trust the most. It's about the people that you mm-hmm. have those strong connections with. Like, if you're hearing it from someone who you haven't seen in a while or like a distant relative, that the message they're trying to get through might not resonate as well. So really, you know, knowing your audience in the sense of knowing what message you're trying to deliver and how they need to hear it and from who they need to hear it is really important. So I love that you gave it that it was her father that gave her this message, knowing what a close relationship they have. And I think very early on in her college career, she confuses, you know, some guys who she thinks might be knives, but in reality, they're forks. And there's one instance that I remember, I think she's at a fraternity party, and she was in the restroom, and she gets assaulted or accosted to the, at the, you know, very least. And throughout, I think it's her freshman year, you know, there are moments where she goes back to that time and she, you know, she kind of has a panic attack. It's a very, very emotional time. And I think that was such a real portrayal of what can happen and her response to the situation. Because I know, you know, having been a college woman, if something like that was to happen, there are a multitude of ways that someone can respond and react to it. And I think Amy, you know, she didn't crack in that situation. She didn't kind of crumble. She stayed strong. She remained confident. And I think that's very hard. How did you decide to give her that strength? What message were you hoping to be able to get through to other women who, you know, could find themselves in that situation?
Yeah, and that's interesting that you read her that way. I'm always interested to hear how people see and read my characters, truly, because I think everybody does put different spins on things and different you take something from a character based on our own lives and our own experiences. I think that it was really to show that this is set in 1988. To 1992 are the college years, and then the book extends to 95, their earlier adult years starting out. And I wanted to show that there are certain things that are really kind of universal truths, and one of them is wanting to find your, you know, your perfect mate, your fit, the partner for life, that true love. So that is part of the story with the forks, knives, and spoons. It's also the story of friendship, but also on this backdrop of a different era is this sexual assault scene. And I really feel like, you know, obviously this is still happening. It's something that I think is better discussed and better handled, and we have more resources today. Does that mean women are reporting? Does that mean women are less apt to be victimized? You know, no. And I feel like those are sort of the messages I wanted to draw up and bring up and to offer opportunities for thought and for discussion. Because she doesn't share that with anybody, really. I mean, yes, her close friends and Andrew knew, and there was some people who were close, but there was no authority figure. There was no, you know, for lack of a better word, another adult that they went to. So, you know, how do you deal with that on your own? She didn't tell her father, presumably. So, So, I mean, I feel like she learns her confidence as she goes through the story. Perhaps that scene kind of shows a little flutter of what she's made of and what she can find, because I think in other areas she's probably not as not as strong or not as as confident to make a decision as she can. I think also too, you know, in any kind of scene, like any kind of situation like that, you know, she truly tried to fight through it for her own good, right? So
yeah,
kind of hard to
No, I think the fact that she did fight through it, that she did stay strong, I mean, to me, it was a very powerful moment. I can't say I ever had that experience myself, but to see it portrayed and to kind of get that message, especially with what's happening on college campuses these days, I think it will really resonate, and it's a great message to send to young women who are going to read this story. I think there's a lot of really great moments in here. And, you know, I'm also an English major, so I spent a lot of my time reading books. So I also tend to overanalyze things. So I'm sure that things that I come
that.
Up with, you probably like, where's this coming from? It's my background.
I love that.
So, like,
it's funny when too, like, I mean, it's very cool. I'm working with a lot of book clubs now, and I love hearing how people interpret things. And, you know, one person says, you know, has one take or one visceral reaction to a character, and then somebody else across the room was like, oh my gosh, I totally related to that character. I had one woman in the book club share that she had related so much to Jenny, in fact, that she ended up bringing her up in a therapy session, reflecting on herself with that. And I was like blown away. I was like, oh my gosh, like this book that is, you know, it's not monumental literary fiction, but I did want it to have a thought-provoking element. I want it to be smart women's fiction. And I was so touched and moved that a character that I created would be so important to somebody that she found something that she could learn from or reflect upon with that. So I would love to chat with you even more about it now that you've finished, because I love hearing those kinds of things and what people see and read and interpret, because it is open for that when you put a novel out into the world.
And I think that's the amazing thing about writing. It can open up so much conversation. Like, you have a message you're trying to get across, and like you said, based on your own experiences in life, everyone's going to come at it from a different angle. So being able to be open to hearing that other side, to be open-minded and be, you know, willing to hear someone else's opinion on things is really, really a great opportunity. It's a great learning opportunity. And you brought up Jenny, who I have to say there were moments as I reflect back on the book and I reflect back on my life, like, yeah, there are definitely things that I can relate to with Jenny. You know, I remember it's their first Thanksgiving. Jenny wasn't, she's from the West Coast, and she decided not to go home for the holiday. So Amy, being the good person that she is, invited her to come home with her. And after Thanksgiving dinner, she's out on a ride with her dad. And Amy's dad is talking to Jenny, and he tells her to believe that she's worth being loved and not to ever settle. And I think that was such a poignant moment. And if you weren't really paying close attention, you could kind of you could miss the subtlety of that message. But that idea of loving yourself, of believing that you're enough, of believing that you're worthy, is such an important message for not just women, but for everyone to hear, to understand that just as you are is enough and that you don't need external validation. I mean, again, you might say I'm reading too much into this. Is that
no, absolutely. Absolutely. That's truly the message that I wanted to put across in the book. And so I like that it was subtle there, that you perceived it that way. And then I feel like it does grow as the story, as the characters do. But
absolutely,
I would say I work with, in my volunteer job, and I work with a lot of younger women, collegiate women, new graduates, young adults, you know, just starting out in their careers and whatnot. So I feel like, and then also even in my job as a doula, I'm with a lot of younger parents for the most part. Some, you know, some older, but some younger. But I found, and obviously this is directed at women, I 100% agree that everybody needs to hear that, no matter, you know, what gender you are. However, this is directed at women, and I felt like I was seeing so many women who were really not believing in themselves, were afraid to kind of step out with confidence and grab life or grab something that they wanted, or perhaps something even just smaller than that, something in your daily life, just didn't believe in themselves or love themselves enough to feel like they were worth something, whether it's the young mom who literally won't take a break for herself, won't you know, let somebody else watch her children for a little bit so she can do something for her. Like, again, guilt-free. Like, we need to do things for ourselves and grow ourselves and love ourselves and appreciate ourselves. And I think that's just something that, you know, I grew up with the gift that my parents gave me of that message. And as a parent, I've really tried from the beginning to, again, pass along that exact message to our children. And I felt like that was the message I wanted to share in this book, that believe in yourself. If that's the only thing people take away from, like, I would be very pleased, because I think that is something that's just so that's so important. And we can face anything that comes our way if we can have that self-love and then therefore the confidence that comes with that.
Absolutely. You know, growing up, everyone always says treat others as you'd want them to treat you. But I think it's important to say treat yourself how you want others to treat you, because you set the tone for how others see you and how others are going to interact with you. So if you're kind of hiding yourself, if you're a bit of a wallflower in the sense that you don't feel confident and comfortable enough to really voice your opinion or really to have a voice of your own, people will see that and they'll take advantage of that. And you're not going to get to grow into the person you're supposed to be because you are too afraid. And like you said, like you're letting life pass you by if you're not willing to stand up for yourself, if you're not willing to say, what is this life I'm leading? This is not what I want. What I want is X. And then to take the steps to make that happen. And I thought
this was a really
pivotal moment for this character. And I think as time goes on, she starts to realize that as well, that it all starts with loving yourself. You have to be in love with yourself before someone else can be in love with you. You know, it all starts with how you see yourself. So treat yourself how you want others to treat you. If you want to be respected, if you want to be valued, if you want people to see you as an authority in a certain instance, treat yourself that way. Otherwise, they're not going to do the same.
Absolutely.
At least that's how I took it.
No, absolutely.
Anyone else
you're spot on. I think that's very well put. Yeah.
And if anyone else has questions or comments or wants to voice their own opinion on what they thought of Forks, Knives, and Spoons, give us a call. We are at 646-787-1676. So I wanted to talk about Veronica, Amy's best friend who grew up in Newport. I believe it's Newport, Rhode Island. I love it there. I was actually there a few months ago. And it's a stunning town. It's a beautiful place. But needless to say, Veronica's life was very privileged. It wasn't something that a lot of people have had the opportunity to live. And she takes her boyfriend to a friend's wedding. And I know that she was kind of struggling with this because he's from like a middle-class family. He didn't graduate college. He's an electrician, even though he runs his own business and owns his own apartment in New York. She struggled with introducing him to people, and she kind of lied about their relationship. Not kind of, she did. She straight up lied about what's happening there, and he hurt her. And, you know, he could have gone, you know, Jersey style and blew up and, you know, embarrassed her, but instead he took the high road. He just kind of turned around and walked away, and she realized what a mistake that was, and I think that was, he communicated so much without even saying anything. And I think that was such a learning moment for her. I'd love to know more about your thoughts on that scene.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That scene, like, it's still like, even as you're talking about it, like makes me sad and for Joey. Like, I love Joey. He's one of my favorite characters. And,
great.
Yeah. I love Joey. And so that scene, it was so hard because it's such an ugly moment for her and such a, like, a horrible thing she does. And I think that, you know, it has built up to the fact that she really, right, like, for all the reasons you said, she was not as comfortable with the perception. It comes down to, like, what did she think other people, especially her parents and her parents' socialite friends in that community, would think of him, would think of her for going out with him. And then, so she'd had all these worries already, and then it kind of comes to this apex where they're at this wedding, and she's around all these old thoughts and old friends, and those exact things that were kind of burbling in her were being verbalized by other people, and she just couldn't, like, take it, and so she lies. And I think it was such a tough moment for me to, like, seeing him and then seeing him walk away and how he handles it. And I think you're right. Like, his understated reaction to it helps her to be able to be introspective, and it helps her to be able to think about what she really wants and what's most important in life and what's most important to her. So, yeah, I think that to underscore her horrible act with his muted response, but very powerful response, and his clear hurt with that, that I liked that juxtaposition.
And I think it kind of set the situation up perfectly for her to have that redeeming moment when months down the road, she finally built up the courage to introduce her boyfriend to her parents. And, you know, she's been so focused on this validation from outside sources, from her friends, from her family, from anyone else. And She's wanted to please everyone else. She's really forgotten to please herself. She's so worried about other people that she's kind of lost who she is in a sense. And finally being with Joey, with being with someone who is not fitting that cookie cutter mold of all the guys her mother's ever had to go out with before, she's found herself. And, you know, for her to be able to, you know, at dinner, have this conversation with her parents where she basically tells them, like, I've been unhappy doing things your way. It's such a, first, it's not an easy thing for a 20-something-year-old woman, you know, to be able to stand up to her parents, I think.
Yes.
To have this type of moment where she's like, listen, I'm doing this for me, and either get on board or don't, but, like, enough is enough. It's such a powerful moment and makes such a statement. And for her to be able to communicate it in a way that didn't come off as, you know, a temper tantrum or her screaming and crying, but really an adult to an adult having a conversation saying, look, this is how it is. Like, for me, it was such a turning point for her character and then for the relationship she has with her parents.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, well, I'm loving hearing your analysis on this from your point of view. But yes, I was like, wow, I did really mean all that. That's really good.
I did a lot of highlighting when I was reading your book. I was like, wow, there's so many good parts. It's just,
it's so much fun.
I know it's about relationships, but at the end of the day, relationships are about communication. And you need to have good communication. If you don't know how to communicate what you want, you're never going to get it. And if you don't know how to communicate it confidently or effectively, you're not going to get what you want. People are going to be confused. They're not going to know how to help you. And if people can't help you, then it can take a little bit longer. So learning how to fine-tune your message, whatever it is, whether it's, I don't want to move to that apartment, to I need you to let me be my own person and stop telling me who I should date.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't matter the situation. It's about finding your own voice and being able to stand up for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think it took her, like, you know, it took her quite a long time to get to that point. For her almost having lost him because of her awful act, she was then able to really stand up for that because she knew she didn't want to lose him again. And I feel like that, her finding her voice and because it was intimidating also based on the relationship she had with her parents, particularly her mom, I think that, you know, say perhaps Amy and her close relationship with her dad, maybe it wouldn't have taken her so long to say something or say the truth about her own feelings. But for Veronica, there was a little bit more of that standoffishness, or she was kind of trying to cushion things for her mom's well-being and to help take care of her mom. And so I think that in some ways she just never really did. She found other reasons and justifications not to speak up about it. Until you're right, like she found that internal motivation to be able to say, no, this is what I want and I need to stand up for it. And also stand up for what I love and for who I love, that she really needed to do that, to more publicly, so to speak, stand up for Joey and for their love and how good he is to her, even though he may not be in the package, so to speak, that they wanted or expected.
You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking back to Friday evening. I was on a flight back from Boston. I'd been delayed hours. I was so tired, but this woman next to me was a chatterbox. I don't know where she was getting her energy from. She'd been stuck at the airport longer than I had. And we're talking, and, you know, she just graduated from Columbia University. She's got her first job consulting in New York, and we're talking about, you know, life and her growing up and how, you know, she's come from this background of, you know, she has a black mother and a Jewish father. So she has, like, you know, she's like, there's so many issues there to work out. I'm like, I can't help you there, but okay, let's keep talking. But she's telling me about her boyfriend and how they're at different places in their lives. And to an extent, she was kind of like Veronica, a little embarrassed, if you will, because he hadn't graduated college, hadn't gone to an Ivy League school like she had. He'd had a very different life experience than her, you know. He moved up to take care of a family member. He was enrolled in community college, but he's doing his thing. And at the end of the day, he makes her happy. But she's so nervous. She's like, well, no one's ever said anything to me about him. But, you know, I worry. Like, why are you worried? If you're happy, that's what matters here, that you stand up for yourself, if you're letting other people sway you because they don't like your decision, like, why do they get a say in your life?
Absolutely.
So to be able to stand
Amen
up for yourself
that.
And to really, yeah, I know, to be able to communicate, especially it's hard to, like, tell your parents, like, hey, this is who I'm with right now. I know it
yep.
can be a challenge, and I know it's not easy or fun sometimes, but at some point you have to realize that you're worth it, that what you want is more important than what other people think, because no matter what you do, I think this is the important thing to remember, you're not always going to make other people happy. You are not responsible for their feelings. Even if you do everything the way they told you to, that doesn't mean that they're going to be happy. So stop worrying about them. Really figure out how you can communicate what it is that you want. Because that's what you can control, and that's what should be your priority.
Absolutely. Boy, what a lucky lady that she was to have you sit next to her and get all that good advice as a young woman. That's another book. Wouldn't it be a fun thing to just, like, have somebody who's always on a plane and have the entire book be sitting on a plane and who rotates through that seat beside you?
You know, it's
so
funny,
cool.
The last two flights I've been on, I had, you know, this young woman who's off to college, and then I had, or just graduated college, and then on a flight about a month or two earlier, I was on a flight with a kid that was just about to start college, and he's telling me all about what he wants to do and his ideas, and I was like, wow, let's focus for a minute, because they were so wrapped up in these other people's expectations, and like, but you need to do what it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of have this, hindsight is 2020, and I wish that I had someone kind of guiding me when I was their age, because I just kind of did my own thing, thinking, oh, this would be cool. And I wish I did have someone to help kind of coach me in a sense, not tell me what to do, but
yeah.
kind of help me see all the options or realize that I didn't have to do it just this one way. I don't have to fit into the box. I can do my own thing. So to be able to help share those messages, absolutely, Leah. I feel like this is a new thing. I should start writing down what happens on my flights more often.
Yeah.
But I think, seriously,
that
I think
could be
that
really
was,
cool. I could just picture that, right? Like, that could be so cool.
I love it.
Lessons
from in flying, right?
I mean, at this point, yeah, flying lessons is taking on a whole new meaning.
That's right. Love it.
But so freshman year, Amy meets this guy, and they're basically college sweethearts. They move in together in New York. She thinks he's the one. She's so hung up on her, you know, utensil classification system that she's like, he's the one. He's my steak knife. He's amazing. And she's kind of blind to some of the warning signs. And, you know, being on the outside looking in, and I'm sure there are women on the line who've been on the outside looking in their friends' relationships saying, oh, those are red flags, those are warning signs, those are things that, why aren't you seeing them? But you can't tell someone that. You know, that's also where the communication thing goes. Like, people need to find things out on their own. You can only kind of hope that they see it soon enough. And, you know, to an extent, you could say Amy did. But for so long, she was really blind to the situation, and I think that can happen to anyone at any point in time. Whether it's a security thing, you've been with someone for so long, they feel safe, you don't want to admit that something's wrong, because then that's change, and change is scary, so why not stay in the status quo? Even if you feel it's a little off, at least you know what to expect. There's so many reasons why you stay stuck.
Yeah.
But I think for Amy to find that reason why it was more important for her to move forward and to really, you know, open her eyes, you know, it wasn't the best way to have it happen, but the fact that she was really able to finally see all the stuff that was going on, and really not just see it, because I think she admitted towards the end that she'd seen some of the warning signs herself, but she wasn't willing to admit it. She wasn't willing to take responsibility in the sense that, like, she knew it was happening.
Well, I think that's another really great lesson. I think humans, and women especially, are really, really good at talking ourselves out of things and out of our gut feeling. There's, you know, like, we have a gut feeling about something, good, bad, or otherwise, and we will justify it away. And no other mammal does that. you have a bad feeling, they flee. We don't. So we try to ignore signs and things like that. Humans do that. So I think absolutely what you're saying is true. I think even going back to her dad's advice to Jenny earlier in the book about, you know, really knowing you're worthy and believe in yourself and know that you're worth being loved, that message that her own dad had shared with her whole life. So she has, Amy had the benefit of getting this advice her whole life and hearing this from her father, having it reinforced. Even she, at the end then, realizes, oh my gosh, like, I had heard all this advice, but I hadn't, something in her had not, like, really registered it all or had not synthesized it enough to for her to take action on it and to apply it to her own life. And then she was finally able to do that as well. Interestingly, around this question and this thought, two thoughts on that. One, I was at a book club and somebody was like, I just couldn't stand it. I was so frustrated. It was so obvious. And it was intended for the reader to see it. And in some ways, I wanted the reader to feel a little bit like Amy, where you kind of believe in him and you like him and you're like, oh, all right. And then you have doubts and then you're back and pulled forth. But I think the reader absolutely knows way before she does. Although I did have somebody say, oh, yeah, gosh, that was such a surprise. And I was like, really? That was a surprise? I was very surprised by your surprise of that. But, so at the same book club, somebody was really aggravated by it and was just so frustrated with her for not seeing it. And then somebody else, we got around the room, and somebody goes, you know, that didn't bother me at all. She goes, I completely understood. I was with this guy, and her life experience was that she had done the exact same thing that Amy did and tried, you know, hanging on to this relationship that was really broken and really wasn't right, but she couldn't see her way out of it and didn't try to justify that away and made it work despite everything. So I think it's really, I think that there has some truth and reality in her reaction. And I do, I really think so. I was, the second thing I wanted to say about that, that I thought of as you were talking was, this spring I worked with, Emily Listfield is another author, and she and another woman do a dating app, like a dating advice app called Gyst, J-Y-S-T. It's a dating app. So we did a cross promotion, and I gave away 5 books for the first people to ask questions. So they asked questions, and then after the week, I answered the first 5 questions. And I have to say, I was a little nervous. I've been married 23 years. I have not been dating. I don't even know half the lingo. Like, I learned about ghosting or something. I don't know whole way people date and break up, and I don't know how to do that in this modern world. So I was actually quite nervous. Just because I wrote about romance and love and all that and relationships, I was like, gosh, I'm not a relationship expert. How am I going to do this and answer these people's questions in a fair way? I was kind of nervous. So I get the questions, and oh my gosh, I had so much fun with it because it turns out I really could answer the questions. The things that these women asked, I was emboldened a little bit because it wasn't looking a friend in the eye where I was trying to be really tippy-toeing around something perhaps. They were there asking for advice. And so I was able to say, you know, he's saying this. No, he doesn't like you. Get out of there. Like, they were absolutely so clear cut and dry. But all 5 of those questions, every single one of them was something along this vein of a woman being enamored with this guy. Like, oh, he's so great when we're together, but then he never gets in touch with me. Well, that's a problem. And he's not committed. So, I mean, there's so many things, even in just this little snippet, that I saw that fit right into that sort of a, you know, woman bending over backwards, sacrificing everything, trying to make something work because we want love and we want to be in a relationship, but women aren't holding out for the right relationship or
absolutely
for somebody who's really a true fit and who's going to be a real equal partner and good communicator and somebody who fits. And that doesn't mean that you don't ever argue or disagree or fight, or it doesn't mean any of that. It means somebody, though, that really is a good match, a good mate, somebody who respects you for who you are, all those things that make the steak knife.
Leah, I totally agree. Absolutely. And I think, like you're saying, it's really all about communication. It's about loving yourself, learning to value yourself, treating yourself with respect to what others do, too, and being confident in what it is that you're doing. And being able to really share that with everyone. And Leah, I just wanted to thank you again for joining me today on the show. Everyone, thank you all for joining. I hope you had a great time hearing what all Leah had to share. And I look forward to talking to you again on the next one. Talk soon, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for having me.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.